You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
There's got to be a morning after if we can hold on night. We have a chance to find the sunshine. Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge to and find the place that's safe and warm. It's not
all right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. And I want to welcome on board Mr. James Vanderloo. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Hey, Earl. I'm doing great. Good morning, and great to be on.
All right. You are the head OEC. Now, give me your title. I have so many different things here. What best fits?
I work for a little, no problem, Earl. I work for a little logistics company here in Milwaukee called the OEC Group. We've been helping people do imports and exports for over 40 years and kind of handle everything along from customs brokerage to handling things overseas with shippers. And then on the export side, we make sure that our products, containers here in Wisconsin can get to where they need to be internationally. So that's basically what we do.
So, I mean, the reason you and I are having this conversation right now is because of is this strike already happening, or is it in process? And what we're talking about,
it's basically,
go ahead, sir.
Oh no, I don't want to interrupt you, Earl. If you'd like me to proceed, right now, what's happening is they have until October 1st, so midnight of September 30th, which is next Monday, to come to terms to an agreement. The labor union is asking, which is the ILA and represents about 85,000 longshore workers across the East Coast. It's the largest labor union in the country. And they are, kind of demanding higher wages as they've seen some of their fellow counterparts get across other types of contract negotiations. And then you have the ports that want more automation. So there is right now a large conflict between the two parties. They seem to not really be anywhere near reaching any terms to their agreements. And yes, so it seems very likely that there will be some type of strike action. The ILA is certainly prepared for it.
So President Biden announced he will not block a strike. Less than a week from now, port workers could be on strike, halting over 40% of all U.S. imports. U.S. East and Gulf Coast ports are bracing themselves ahead of labor contract expiring September 30th. Let's get into the impact of what this could be. And as I was saying to you earlier, I remember, so clearly, most of my life, I haven't thought much at all about, supply side of things. And how things come into this country, and because they've always been there. And so many of us this is not something we waste any time thinking about, the supply side of things. They're always here. We go to whatever it is we need, we go to the store and it's there. But something happened several times over the last 10 years. One was the big ship that was locked, blocking further up by Canada. Do you remember that?
Oh, well, there's been a number of instances where we've had, there's been labor strikes, there's been steamship lines that have gone out of business over the years.
I think it was in the Panama Canal, and
Do you mean where the Ever Given got stuck in the Suez Canal?
Yes, in the Suez Canal.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And so we didn't. Go ahead.
Exactly.
No, go ahead.
No. I know there's been a lot of issues that have drawn attention to our industry in the last 10 years, as you mentioned. As I said, you know, most of the time, no one wants to talk to us about it, especially in the media, unless there's trouble afoot. And that's kind of, you know, where we find ourselves again today. But, you know, every year we're kind of dealing with similar types of issues. And yes, the market's been very different to what you just pointed out. And when you really rely on how globalized our supply chains are, you know, it can be kind of scary when you think of, you know, how one incident like that, like a ship getting caught or a bridge collapsing, and like in Baltimore, how that can just overnight affect your ability to have, you know, various things on your table or in your market shelves you have, you know, had no problems finding in the past. So I completely agree with you.
Well, you know, COVID,
a bit nuanced.
Well, yeah, COVID. Yeah. And so we saw the impact, stores that, you know, shelves being, you know, almost empty, you know, for months. And so that was something that really woke me up to the supply side of things and just how precarious, you know, our lives can be if that's interrupted. But I'm looking here and the union is asking for a 77% pay increase. Now, you know, I don't know, Calvin, but do you think it's likely that we'd be around here long if we asked for 77% pay increase? I mean, you know, so clearly this is not something that's going to be handled overnight. There is a distinct possibility that this could happen and that these dock workers could wind up striking. Well, the reason that I think it's so important, sir, is the fact that we're in a presidential election year, that we are certainly at a precarious time with the economy, the interest rates that have been so extreme and that now are starting to come down, an interruption in this could throw all that into chaos. Is it safe to say that, sir?
Yes. Like I said, you know, we've tried to diversify our supply chains and tried to work with our customers because we knew that this was a possibility, however likely or unlikely it had seemed. But yes, if the strike is prolonged by more than a week or two, it's going to have lasting effects regardless of whether they resolve the contract or not. Regardless of whether they get all the pay, it's going to affect businesses that can't get their cargo. Last time we saw a strike, similarly on the West Coast, trucking brokerages and certain companies went out of business because they couldn't meet their cash flow demands within the, you know, the months that it took to backlog their containers. It just causes a huge mess in our already strained supply chains. I don't know if you know this, but actually the United States has very dilapidated supply chains relative to like other countries like Rotterdam, you know, Belgium, even China has a much better port infrastructure. And that's actually one of the points of contention of the contract as well. The union has stated 0% automation on any of the ports, including some of the cranes and some of the operating equipment. So that's actually, in addition to the 75% you mentioned, that's also a big hurdle that they're going to have to climb if they want to resolve the contract.
So what we do know is that from the union's perspective, they couldn't have picked a better time for them. The holidays are on the horizon. And so when you mix all those things together, this is something that clearly President Biden and our government is looking closely at. The presidential people, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump will be looking at this and their people, because again, if this thing happens and it looks like for all the world that it's going to happen, you talk about possibly being able to withstand, you know, 4 weeks. But what happens after that?
I mean, you know, from sources, some sources inside the, you know, some of the union, well, you know, we've heard rumors of them preparing for an 80-day strike. Like I said, if that happens, you're really in a dire situation. Because the West Coast is going to be absolutely overloaded with containers. Again, depending on how the various carriers charge these fees, they may all of a sudden decide that, hey, we're no longer, you know, bringing anything into the East Coast of the United States. Drop everything off at the nearest port using something within their contracts called force majeure. And then it's up to the responsibility of the importer to find their containers and get it delivered to them. So it can become a huge mess. And like I said, every one day that it goes, the backlog can go on for weeks and weeks. So you'll be feeling this, you know, well into the pricing and well into delays of having shortages of things on the shelves, you know, possibly through 2025, you know, maybe through the first quarter, you know, if it gets really bad.
So my guess is James Vandelo, Lou, and he is, you know, talking about what I think is something that we all should be aware of, and that's an impending strike by port workers by September 30th. I mean, it's just around the corner. Our phone lines are open, as always, at 855-752-4842. Let me ask you, you know, the president, Joe Biden, has clearly stated right now we're not going to get involved in this. But is there a possibility if after an extended period of time, the government can step forward? I mean, what could the government do to offset or create a barrier or something, or maybe enter and with the negotiations? And, you know, I mean, is that what they can do? I can't see how the government can can fix this.
So there's two things that they can do, Earl. And one of them is institute what's called the Taft-Hartley Act. And that came around Truman's time. And basically what that does is that forces union workers into certain practices. And that can force them back to work.
So, James, hang on a second. Mr. James Vandelo, hang on. 855-752-4842 is the number. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And boy, as if we needed to have another dark cloud hanging over our heads as we move towards, you know, this presidential election. My guest is Mr. James Vandelo. He is the head at OEC Group Milwaukee, a leading facilitator in importing goods from all over the globe. So you can join us at 855-752-4842. So, Mr. Vandelo, it is, you know, just frightening to me as you think about all the different aspects of, you know, what could happen if this thing does come to fruition. And, you know, we're just coming, as I was stating earlier, just coming off, you know, this just earth-shattering inflation and The economy is at a perilous time right now with layoffs and other things. And this thing could tip it over the edge and push us into recession. You said that you guys, you know, work, and this is basically going to impact and affect the East Coast. Is that it? I mean, is this divided over the West Coast and the East Coast? How is this set up? Supply chains, East Coast, West Coast, North, South. How does that work?
So, yes, it's divided into two sections in the United States, and thankfully they don't negotiate contracts on the same year. So the ILWU represents the West Coast, and they negotiated their contracts last year. And then the ILA represents not only the East Coast, but also Houston and some of the Gulf ports, such as Mobile and Tampa as well. So it's a very far-encompassing strike action that's going to occur. And we're hearing in Canada that, you know, they might also show solidarity with the workers and not really process any containers coming in through Canada. So, yeah, it could, you know, that's kind of how it's all spread up. And again, it comes back to disputes between the two parties, which are the operations part and the union part. And the union on the West Coast received a big jump in rates and healthcare. And so their East Coast counterparts, you know, feel entitled to the same or more, depending on the things that you mentioned, such as inflation and things that we're seeing in the cost of everyday living. Things are getting way more expensive. And, you know, this, if there is a big delay in the market with the strike, the prices will continue to go up because the importers will have to pass on the added cost of this to the consumers who have already been strained through the year, as you mentioned.
Hey, Calvin, you want to read the text?
Yeah, we have Brendan from New Jersey. He chimed in and said, talking about President Biden, he ended up getting involved in the rail workers strike that happened after the Ohio disaster. Brendan wasn't exactly pleased with how it all worked out, but at the same time, supply line is such a huge issue.
Mr. Vandeleu?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, that's the thing is, you know, obviously, I think when the government has to come in and mediate, you know, that's typically a last case. You'd hope the, you know, the adults in the room on either party could work it out and therefore maximize the benefits to each, because if the government comes in, they're going to use whatever leverage, you know, they can and, you know, make maybe less of a deal for both sides than if they had just compromised in the first place. So, and obviously that requires even more time for the government to come in and, you know, mediate those kinds of things. So I can understand, Brendan's problem with it. It may be something that the union worker doesn't actually like at the end of the day.
All right, Tom Fumelli.
Morning. Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to ask you, just because of the fact that I feel like when you have a president, a Republican in the office, one, they don't support unions. And because they don't support unions, they've kind of closed their eyes to the whole thing. Whereas you guys have a huge supporter in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And this could actually hurt the presidential election. I understand the pain points of doing it now would be probably a good idea. But at the same time, does this hurt an opportunity that you may have, like in terms of the future, if we get a Project 2025 or a, God forbid, a Donald Trump-type president?
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call.
It's a great point. If a Trump administration comes in, they're more likely to be less favorable to the unions. And, you know, that could be catastrophic. You know, we're hoping that this isn't the October surprise that we didn't see coming. And we hope that it, you know, doesn't influence the elections. You never know. It may be an opportunity for the Harris administration or a Harris campaign to see if they can push the levers while she's still in vice president. So there's a lot of things that can happen. It's just we're kind of preparing for the worst case and trying to get our customers prepared for the worst case at the moment. So, yeah, it could be difficult if there's a change of administration, too, that could set things back even further.
All right. I want to say, you know, thank you very much for this timely information. And, you know, man, you know, you just look around you and these things just keep adding up. But if we don't know about it, it's a surprise. You have helped us at least prepare for it. We know it's on the horizon. And I thank you very much. And I certainly will reach out to you as, you know, things progress.
Thanks so much, Earl. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
And you as well. Thank you very much. This is Mr. James Vanderloo. And I will tell you guys, it just doesn't seem to ever stop. And I don't think any of us, we thought we were past this. Anyway, 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Son of a gun.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Before we went to a break, we had my guest on, and he was James Vanderloo, and we were talking about the supply chain and how we're, you know, facing what we hope is not going to happen, and that's a shutdown of one of the largest supply chains in the entire country and in the world. This could be happening in a matter of 4 days, and so I want to thank him for coming on and giving us a warning. Let's go to Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
Well, what I say is that's nice that you gave us that warning, but the sky is not falling, and whatever happened to equal pay for equal work? One of the things, we all lived through Act 10, and one of the things that I actually found out yesterday, because you know I'm the lady with the numbers, the Milwaukee Public School teachers, Walker ended their union. Do you know that just, and this is up to 2023, Milwaukee school teachers lost $2,500 per year that they made less than in 2010. And what that translates to the present teachers as of 2023, the teachers make $23,000 less than they did in 2010, and that is the loss of all the things that they got, health care, pensions, so on and so forth. So if these people are going to be striking for equal pay as the same people who are getting in on the East Coast, yeah, we're going to have to tighten our belts and we're going to have to support them because we live in this country and we do want equal pay for equal work. And I think that when he comes on here and he spews this, like the sky is falling, the sky is falling, let them negotiate. And it's not Biden's fault. It's not Harris' fault. It is the CEOs who run these companies and what they charge and what they're willing to pay their workers. That's what we always have to keep in mind.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much for the call. But I do want to say, you know, I didn't take it as him spewing, information that was against, that was anti-union. The reason I had him on was to bring this to the attention of people. I mean, I wasn't aware of it. I don't know how many of you were aware of it. And it is alarming. And because of the fact that, you know, we're just coming out of this fog of inflation. And if, in fact, in 4 days, this strike does occur, and it certainly looks like it's going to happen, and the supply of things is interrupted, prices go up again, and people, again, are going to be faced with some of those times that we were not so many years ago when we went to the stores and the things that we needed weren't on the shelf. That's all we were doing is bringing the attention to people to make people aware of, you know, what is in the process. I want to talk now about Alan Eugene Miller. He is to become the second inmate executed with nitrogen gas in the U.S. and what we need to know about it. I don't know if you're aware, but in the last 4 days, you know, so he would be the 18th person executed in the nation. But in the last 5 days, there have been a 6-day period, there have been 5 people executed. And in all the things that I was reading, 3 of those people were kind of diagnosed as mentally ill. Now, I don't know. Yes, they've done some horrific things. Alan Eugene Miller, 59, was convicted of murdering Terry Jarvis, Lee Holbrooks, and Christopher Yancey in 2 workplace shootings on the morning of August 5th, 1999, in suburban Birmingham city of Pelham. If his execution moves forward as expected, he will become the 4th inmate executed in Alabama in 2024 and the 18th in the nation. He's also among 5 men being executed in the U.S. in just a 6-day period. South Carolina executed Freddie Owens on Friday, and on Tuesday, Missouri executed Marcellus Williams less than an hour before Texas executed Travis James Mullis. Now, Miller was supposed to be executed by lethal injection in September, but staff could not find his veins for an IV line before the death warrant expired. Therefore, the inmate was poked with needles for over an hour while vertically strapped to a gurney. Here's what you need to know about Miller's case, who his victims were, and other details of the execution. So what you need to know is, you know, this man, Miller, was born January 20th, 1965 and grew up with a long history of mental illness in his family, tracing back at least 4 generations. At a young age, Miller's family constantly moved and he experienced severe poverty. The court record says when his parents divorced, his mother and siblings spent years on welfare and food stamps, the document continued. Miller's mother, Barbara, remarried his father for financial reasons, but court records say he struggled to keep a stable job and frequently thought people were plotting against him, including his co-workers. Now, this man has been diagnosed with severe mental illness. Diagnosed. Severe mental illness. And yes, he murdered three people. Here's my question. 855-752-4842. I have a son that's mentally ill. I always, you know, preface when I'm talking about these things that I have a son who's mentally ill. There is a legal diagnosis for people who are mentally ill. Okay? If there wasn't something wrong with them, there would not be such a thing as a mentally ill diagnosis. And so this man killed three people. And yes, horrible. You can't bring those people back. But after all these years, what do we gain by executing a man who we know is mentally ill? He's been mentally ill his entire life. What do we gain by that as a society? 855-752-4842. Your thoughts. I understand that you can say, well, the family members of the people that he executed, I understand their pain. Well, you can say, well, maybe you can't understand their pain. Not to the degree that I've had somebody in my family murdered. Having lost so many members of my, you know, immediate family, I know the pain of losing loved ones. But what are your thoughts? Should this man be put to death? And it's in the manner he's going to be executed with nitrogen gas, which they say is one of the most horrible ways to execute somebody. 855. 752-4842, your thoughts. Let's go to Karina from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Karina. You say what?
Oh, good morning, Earl. You see, first thing what you said is about the veins, and this is not an execution. This is a torture, okay? So we're moving from execution to torture, and I don't understand why we're doing it where there is a machine, like a small little machine, like almost like a sugar check, right? What you can put on the hand or anywhere on the person, and it will illuminate the veins. It's designed for someone who has a very thin, for babies, for somebody who's obese. We have it everywhere. We have it in this health system. We have all over the world. Why are they not using it in jail? Why are they continuously doing it? This is not the first time happening when they are torturing a person who they're supposed to kill. So they torture them and they kill them the most inhuman way, and especially to someone who is mentally disabled. It's like having someone who doesn't have a legs ask to walk 10 stories up and down and see how many times that person will fail to knock his head down and die. This is what it is. Because the human being, even with, I'm so sorry, and I know that if that would be my family, I would be vengeance. I would want to have a vengeance. And I understand that the people and the government looking at the way, okay, we already spent so much money on welfare and everything, that person's still no good. Now we have to spend for a lifetime to keep him in the mental institution or a jail. So we're still spending tax money to preserve that life, which no good. But we are human. We're not wolves.
Hey, Karina, thank you very much for the call. You know, is it a tough call? Yes, it is. But listen to this. The first execution using that gas was in January when the execution of 58-year-old Kenneth Smith, who appeared to convulse and shake vigorously for about 4 minutes after the nitrogen gas began flowing, according to reporter Marty Roney. Roney will also be a witness at Miller's execution and will report on his observations. The Reverend Jeff Hood, a spiritual advisor who has witnessed more than a half dozen executions, was at Smith's. 855-752-4842 is the number. Your thoughts? You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. So I'm talking about, you know, these executions and what your thoughts are. Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. How you doing, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. New phone number. It works.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, hey, you know, regarding capital punishment, I looked into this topic years ago, and it appears to me that these states that welcome, you know, capital punishment, that, you know, that they still promote it, they're doing it really on behalf of the lawyers. You know, they make a lot of money in all these appeals. Of course, once the conviction's done, you know, that's typically the end of the gravy train for the lawyers. And it just seems to me, and while I'm not a proponent of capital punishment, I think there is an exception to every rule. It appears to me that those states that have capital punishment, they're heavily influenced by the lawyers in that community, because they just, you know, they can continue invoicing.
So Mike, I would agree with you. What about when they're putting to death mentally ill people that they know are mentally ill?
That's to me, that's a no-brainer. You know, if there's any sign of mental illness, the capital punishment should be off the table.
That's my point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most prudent people would agree. Here's the other thing that's kind of funny. We talked about this a few months ago. You know, we have solitary confinement now normalized within the prison community,
right,
which causes
mental illness,
a great deal of mental anxiety and problems. It's almost like they're doing this on purpose. And I don't want to go down that road, but it's odd that, for example, Gabby Giffords' shooter, Jared Loughner, within 2 days when they arrested him, you know, they then reported on the news that he was put in solitary confinement. It only takes, in, you know, 72 hours, maybe a day or two more, and it, the impact is realized. People need to be around people. They need to be around, you know, different atmospheres, and to be stuck in a hole or stuck in a cell with no contact, it will drive everything.
Hey, Mike, I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Jim from Brookfield. Good morning to you, Jim. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I say I'm against capital punishment. It's been proven over and over again. It does not reduce any crime. It's off proven. It's really not even cost effective, if that should even be an issue. I think anybody with any kind of mental illness, I think that's, it's immoral and criminal ourselves if we execute somebody with any mental illness. And I'd also just like to say I noticed a hypocrisy in the pro-life movement. You know, all human life is sacred. You can't even have, you know, in vitro fertilization or anything like that, or, you know, protecting, you know, the unborn and whatnot. Where are they when these individuals, especially the mentally ill or anybody, is executed? If all human life is sacred, why aren't they being more, a stronger advocate against the death penalty?
Hey, Jim, man, you hit it out of the park, man. And I wish I had more time, man. Thank you very much for the call. CJ, you got the last of it, my friend. You say what?
Well, sadly, as you speak of that, people with mental health issues, there's probably no rehabilitation, and some people fake that they're
CJ, we're not talking about people who fake it. We're talking about people who have been diagnosed for years and for decades.
Claimed insanity after these incidents, and no,
I've got a son that is mentally ill. He has gone through all the tests. It's been over 25 years. People don't fake mental illness. There's nothing to be gained by faking mental illness. Go ahead.
He hasn't killed anybody, has he?
No, he hasn't.
He hasn't killed anybody, has he?
No, he hasn't. But guess what?
Okay.
Even if a person has killed somebody and they are mentally ill, what is gained by killing them?
Hopefully a lot of money incarcerating them and trying to rehabilitate them. No, they should be put to death just like they killed somebody. Whether they're insane or not, they can't be rehabilitated. There's proof they did it. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I didn't expect anything different from you. It's the reason that I took the call. Because there are many people who agree and believe what you believe and have a right to that. All right. Thank everybody who made the show go. Calvin, I want to thank you as always. Up next, Jane Matinere and Greg Bach, Matinere on Air. I'll be back tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.